Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Psalm 33, verse 10 and 11 from the New King James Bible says this: "The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He makes the plans of the people of no effect. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of his heart to all generations." I'm with Daniel Smith from UN Watch. Now, Daniel, what is UN Watch?
UN Watch is a human rights organization based in Geneva, Switzerland, that monitors the UN by the standard of its own charter. And we have a particular focus on combating anti-Semitism and anti-Israel bias within the UN system, which is perhaps the largest area where the UN strays from its founding principles. But we also are a voice for the voiceless within the UN system. We bring dissidents from dictatorships that have outsized influence within the UN system to come and testify about the human rights situations in their countries.
Now, UNRWA look after Palestinians. What is UNRWA?
UNRWA is the UN refugee agency for Palestinians. There are only two refugee agencies under the UN in the world. There's one, UNRWA, for Palestinians, and there's the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, which serves every other population in the world. UNRWA was founded in 1949 and UNHCR a year later in 1950. Today, UNRWA provides social services for Palestinian so-called refugees in Gaza, the West Bank, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon, as well as East Jerusalem. And these social services range from mostly schools, but also healthcare and humanitarian aid. And they still run refugee camps that were founded over 70 years ago. And they, because UNRWA applies a different definition of the word refugee than UNHCR does, so Palestinians can, it's a unique situation in the world where Palestinians remain refugees generation after generation. The status is passed down. Actually, it's passed down patrilineally. So a Palestinian male who's considered a refugee under UNRWA's definition, his children can also be considered Palestinian refugees. So whereas after the war of 1948, there were something like 750,000, maybe 700,000 Palestinian refugees. Today, there are almost 6 million under UNRWA's definition, according to them, that are Palestinian refugees, that are eligible to receive services from them. And another thing that makes UNRWA unique from UNHCR is that it does not have a mandate to resettle. So whereas UNHCR is helping refugees obtain citizenship in other countries, UNRWA does not have this mandate, so they keep them refugees, as I said, generation to generation.
So some of these people are refugees, but still in their same country, but classed as refugees?
Well, that's the case in Jordan, where Jordan gave citizenship to most Palestinian refugees that are based there. I think there's about 2 million. So you have Jordanian citizens whose their ancestors came from, you know, the British Mandate of Palestine and were refugees from the war of 1948, ended up in Jordan. But they have citizenship in a different country now, yet they're still considered refugees, according to UNRWA. In Syria, Lebanon, that's not the case. They were never given citizenship. So they're sort of stateless refugees living in refugee camps in Syria and Lebanon. Gaza, it's an interesting situation because 70% of Gaza's population are considered refugees by UNRWA. But they've been living there, you know, since 1948, 1949. They've, you know, many countries in the world consider that they've established a state there, but it's not, they still consider that not to be their home. They still consider their home to be in Israel proper. And that is, you know, we believe that is really the core of the conflict. And the core fuel that led to October 7th was this notion in Gaza that Gaza is not our home. Our home is on the other side of the fence. We have to break through, and we have to go take it.
You have the same situation in Bethlehem. You have three refugee camps in Bethlehem, which is still the traditional before 1948 Palestine. So are they still classed as refugees, even though they haven't actually physically left the country?
Yeah, they are classed as refugees. And it's really the great question. Where are they refugees from? And when you answer that question, you realize why this conflict is still burning, you know, why this conflict, it's fuel for the conflict. They haven't been resettled. The situation, the conflict can't end until they are. And UNRWA, it's UNRWA's mandate that's keeping it alive.
So UNRWA are helping Palestinians with aid. So that sounds like a good thing. But is there a darker side?
Of course, there's a darker side. And the aid is a good thing. It's a good thing, but it also has some drawbacks. For instance, in Gaza, Hamas sees its core responsibility as destroying Israel. It doesn't see its core responsibility as providing for its own people. And its leaders will say, when you ask them, it's not Hamas's responsibility to care for their own people. It's the UN's responsibility. That's what UNRWA does. UNRWA provides the social services. So Hamas can use all of its financial resources not to care for its people, but to build terror tunnels and to attack Israel and invest in its terror infrastructure. So it sounds like a good thing that aid is being provided to the people of Gaza, but it's not a good thing that aid is being provided so that their own leaders don't have to worry about it and can worry about attacking Israel. However, we're not advocating that aid be removed or that aid be reduced or anything like that. For the short term, the near term, the aid needs to be replaced with aid from other agencies. The aid is essential for stability at the moment in the region. In the long term, we'd love to see Palestinian leadership taking responsibility for providing these services to their own population. But in the short term, you can't overnight say the aid needs to. I mean, that would be a terrible crisis to just remove all the aid overnight.
Were UNRWA part of the massacre that took place in Israel on October the 7th?
Yes, according to Israeli intelligence, which came out a couple weeks ago, at least 12 staff members of UNRWA were part of the participated in the October 7th massacre in varying roles. But it's far deeper than just those 12. You know, defenders of UNRWA have been saying, oh, it's just a few bad apples in, you know, an agency that employs 13,000 within Gaza. But the truth is that, you know, a few days later, intelligence came out, reported on by the Wall Street Journal, that up to 10% of UNRWA staff have links to, and links meaning their members, of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad and other militant groups in Gaza. Other terrorist groups in Gaza. And the number 10% is actually even a little bit deceptive because only men can have membership in those groups. So if you look at the percentage of men only that are employed by UNRWA and are members of these groups, it's higher, something like 20%, even a little bit higher than that. So this is a terrible problem within UNRWA, that so much of its staff are members of a terrorist group. And even more than, you know, if the 12 goes from the 12 who actually, there's evidence that they participated on October 7th, goes to 1,200 that are members of Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And then there's 3,000 who are members of a Telegram group that we at UN Watch exposed several weeks ago. This Telegram group, you know, on a normal day, it's comprised of teachers discussing their salaries, logistical questions about employment at UNRWA. And then on October 7th, it was filled with teachers celebrating the attacks. Mm. And there was not one post in the group pushing back, saying, hey, this is not so good. Hey, we shouldn't be slaughtering people. Hey, everyone was in agreement. These posts were celebrated, liked, replied to. And you know what? When we uncovered this, it wasn't surprising to us because we've been doing research going back to as far as 2015 on the social media pages of UNRWA teachers, and we've found dozens and dozens, up to 180 examples of UNRWA employees who were posting content that celebrates terrorism, incites jihadi terrorism, incites anti-Semitism, praises Adolf Hitler, and not once in all of our research did we ever find one UNRWA teacher pushing back against another UNRWA teacher for posting such content. In fact, we found the opposite. We found this content was liked by their colleagues. There were supportive replies to all of this content. So this is not a few bad apples. There's evidence of 12 that participated. There's 1,200 that are members. There's 3,000 that were in this group celebrating the day. And from our research, we haven't found one example of someone who's pushing back against it from within the organization.
So UNRWA are employing members of Hamas?
Yes, UNRWA are employing members of Hamas. And this is no longer just speculation, but it never really was speculation. You know, we recently, you know, looked back and we knew about this quote, but we just looked back on it and it really helps make sense of the picture today. The UNRWA's former commissioner general, his name is Peter Hansen. He was commissioner general from 1997 until 2005, I believe. So he was interviewed by the CBC in 2004 when there was a little scandal happening about Canadian funding to UNRWA at the time. And he said, I have no doubt that there are members of Hamas on UNRWA's payroll. Mm. And I don't see that as a crime. He said this in 2004, the Commissioner General of UNRWA, the Chief of UNRWA. So this isn't something new. This isn't something they didn't know about. It's something that, in their words, they didn't see as a crime.
Now, the UK has prescribed Hamas as a terrorist organization, so I can be prosecuted if I give money to Hamas. But our governments are giving money to the UN.
That's a great point. To the credit of all of these governments now, the US, the UK, Canada, you know, and about a dozen or so others, they've frozen funding to UNRWA because, you know, for that point, they realized that taxpayer dollars are going to support terrorism with this money that's being paid to UNRWA right now. Mm-hmm. It's paying the salaries of these terrorists. And, you know, there's growing evidence that's, you know, the actual, you know, the humanitarian aid even is being co-opted by Hamas. And really funding that's going into UNRWA right now is reaching the hands of Hamas. That's unacceptable, obviously. The problem is that the funding freeze, you know, it's led to this sort of investigation. They call it an independent, quote-unquote independent review of UNRWA, which all of these Western governments are demanding. And our fear right now is that this sham investigation is going to just check a box for these governments. They can say, okay, the review was done. Now we're going to unfreeze the funding. And that's what we're pushing hard against right now, pushing back to make sure that funding is not unfrozen, because it will continue reaching the hands of Hamas. And it's the time right now to find a replacement for UNRWA's work, humanitarian work, and to divert funds to other organizations that are operating in Gaza that can distribute the humanitarian aid, not to just open the door again to this funding that can go right into Hamas's hands.
Mm. Tell us about Sarah Douglas and her tweets. Who is she and what has she been up to?
Yes, so Sarah Douglas is an official at UN Women. We uncovered in December that she had been liking tons and tons of tweets on X, on Twitter, that are anti-Israel, not just anti-Israel, but, you know, saying that Israel is committing genocide. Really the strongest like criticisms, really anti-Zionist content, anti-Semitic content that she's supporting on Twitter. And she's an official at UN Women. And, you know, it took UN Women, I think it was over 50 days before they responded with any kind of criticism of the sexual violence that took place on October 7th, which is, you know, just completely outrageous. Mm-hmm. And when people are wondering, how could that be? How could UN Women wait so long? This is the answer. Their officials are completely biased. They hate Israel. They don't want to see Israel ever as a victim. They don't want to see Israeli women as victims. They want to turn the other way and ignore that it happened. And so we exposed that Sarah Douglas is a completely biased official. Now, as a UN official, there are ethics rules that she has to abide by, and one of them being neutrality on, you know, on issues. You have to be neutral. You can't have a bias against one country and let that affect your work. So we exposed this. We have petitioned the UN to fire her for her violation of the UN ethics code. And the UN has admitted that she did indeed violate their ethics code. They said there's an investigation ongoing, and we haven't heard anything since then. They haven't announced anything. Her position hasn't changed. As far as we know, she has not been fired. So it's an ongoing, it's been kind of overshadowed by the UNRWA news right now, but this is an ongoing campaign for us to make sure that there's accountability here, and that anti-Israel officials that are violating the UN's own code of ethics are removed from their position.
Is the UN anti-Semitic?
I mean, my answer is yes, but formulating the exact reason why is not so, you know, I have to think about it for a second. Yeah. It is anti-Semitic if you look at the double standard that it applies to Israel. That's an easy way of showing it. Mm. And I'm going to go by the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition, which says that applying a double standard to Israel that you wouldn't apply to any other country in the world, that's an example of anti-Semitism. Why are you applying a double standard to the one Jewish country in the world? So in the General Assembly, this past year, there were 14 resolutions against Israel and 7 against the rest of the world combined. How can that be?
Yeah.
You know, how can it be? Israel is that there are 2 times more resolutions on Israel than the entire rest of the world combined. That is a double standard. That in and of itself is anti-Semitic. There are tons of other examples I could use to show why the UN is anti-Semitic, but I think that's one real solid proof of it.
Of course, other countries are doing bad things as well, but nobody brings them to the Human Rights Court as well, do they?
Of course. You're referencing the ICJ, the Human Rights Court?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there are other countries that are brought to the ICJ, but this, no other country is brought for defending itself. You know, no other country is brought to the ICJ and accused of genocide for defending itself from, you know, after the slaughter of its people. So yes, there's a clear double standard there in this sham case against Israel.
UNRWA runs schools as well. How are the schools being run? Are they being run well?
It depends what your definition of well is. If you're a Hamas terrorist, you probably would say UNRWA schools are being run well. They're teaching, they're brainwashing the children to hate Jews, to hate Israel.
Is that through the school books?
It is through the school books. You know, we at UN Watch, the school books, that's not our expertise, but you know, we can, you know, there are reports from other organizations. One organization, Impact SC, that looks very closely at the textbooks in UNRWA, and they'll point out every problem. We issued a joint report with them in March of last year, which did some analysis on very problematic content within the textbooks, as well as from our end, we landed the research on the social media posts of teachers to show what they really believe, what they really think, and what they're likely, you know, even outside of the textbook, what they're encouraging their students to do, what they're teaching their students in the classroom.
So obviously the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip need aid at the moment, but do you think in the future UNRWA should be taken out of Gaza and not be allowed to be there anymore?
I think UNRWA should be dissolved as an organization. Again, can it happen overnight? No. The humanitarian aid needs to flow. But what can happen overnight is funds need to immediately start being transferred to other humanitarian aid organizations that are operating in Gaza, that can operate in Gaza but aren't currently, to be distributing that aid. And these organizations exist. You know, there's war in Sudan right now, right? Mm-hmm. Sudan doesn't have UNRWA. How is the UN distributing humanitarian aid in that war zone? And the, you know, many other war zones in the world, the UN knows how to do it. There's no reason why they can't figure it out in Gaza without UNRWA. There's the World Food Program, which already is operating in Gaza. There's WHO, UNHCR, there's USAID. There's plenty of international agencies that could be operating to distribute this aid. There's no reason why it needs to be UNRWA. And I actually think that, in a way, you could almost say that UNRWA uses the civilian population of Gaza as a human shield for its political mission, its political mandate, which is return. Return to Israel is really the core of UNRWA's, that is UNRWA's purpose. That is its end goal, is to return Palestinian refugees from 1948 to Israel. And it built up this whole humanitarian aid infrastructure to shield its political mission. And now when it's saying, you know, they're signaling that their operations can't continue past February without more funding, as if they're going to overnight just, you know, aid is just going to disappear in Gaza. That's clearly not the case, but the fact that they're even signaling that that might happen, they're putting Gaza's civilian population on the table and saying, you want to save them, you have to keep our political mission alive. And I don't think we can accept that.
The EU put water pipes into Gaza. Was that a good thing?
It could have been a good thing if they were used as water pipes. However, you know, it was well documented. Hamas even, they put out a video boasting that they had taken these water pipes and turned them into rockets to shoot into Israel. And you know what, that I mentioned before, that UNRWA's mission really is what led to October 7th, but this really highlights it, is that Hamas could have taken the water pipes to build infrastructure for their people in Gaza, but because of UNRWA's message to the Gazan people, 70% of you are refugees, this is not your home, your home is on the other side of the fence. So with that logic, why would they build infrastructure for themselves in a place that's not their home? They would build the tools to get back to their home, rockets to shoot into Israel, to terrorize the society, to play the long game of returning to Israel. And that's the message that UNRWA teaches them. That's Hamas's goal, destroying Israel. So the EU, it can't be funding UNRWA and then be surprised when it sends civilian infrastructure into Gaza that are used to attack Israel. It can't be surprised. It's really the same thing. Funding UNRWA is doing the same thing as, you know, providing missiles to Hamas. It's fuel to keep the conflict going.
Can Israel actually destroy Hamas in Gaza? And if they do, will it just rebuild again?
I'm not a military analyst or expert on this issue. I know that that's Israel's war aim, is destroying Hamas, and it has the right to have that as an aim, because that's critical to Israel's defense, is for there to no longer be a terror organization bent on the destruction of the state of Israel on Israel's border. So Israel has the right to have that as a war aim. And that's, I mean, I could say that's, yes, I personally hope that the terrorist organization, that Hamas, is destroyed completely. But do I think it will happen? That's not my expertise to be able to say.
Where were you when you heard about the terrorist attack on the 7th of October? How did you get to hear about it?
So I'm an observant Jew, and it was the holiday of Simchat Torah for us, which is where we celebrate the end of the yearly cycle of reading the different portions of the Torah. It's supposed to be the happiest day of the year. I live here in Jerusalem, but I was actually visiting family in Miami on October 7th. I had flown 2 days earlier. And because it was a holiday for us, I don't use my phone on holidays. I don't watch the TV. But my family actually is not observant. So it was my family that told me early in the morning, first thing I woke up in Miami, what was happening back home in Israel. And it was just an utter shock. The first, I started crying. The immediate reaction was, how is this possible? This can't be. This must be misinformation. This must not actually be happening. How could Hamas have taken over Kibbutzim in the south? It's still hard to picture how it happened. But that was really for Israel. You know, immediately they were saying, is this Israel's 9/11? Like, absolutely, you know, or it changed everything here.
What is your prayer for the future for Israel?
My prayer for the future? Security and peace. We want, at this point, I just want to preface that we've kind of strayed from my role at, you know, speaking on behalf of UN Watch to now me as an Israeli. What is my prayer for Israel? I'm not speaking, saying that this is UN Watch's prayer for Israel, but as an Israeli, my prayer for Israel is security and peace. I mean, there's no reason why that wouldn't be UN Watch's position as well. But it's, you know, Israel has a right, obviously, to exist, and to exist without terror organizations murdering its civilians. It's, you know, we want to live in peace with our neighbors. Here in Jerusalem, you see it every day, Jews and Arabs coexisting. There's no reason why it shouldn't happen in this region. Everywhere, we should have peace with our neighbors. It's been an unbelievable development since 2020. The peace that Israel was able to form with the UAE and with Bahrain and with Morocco through the Abraham Accords. There's no reason why that shouldn't continue to spread, and why Israel and our neighbors, we should be able to thrive together. The only reason would be because they don't want Israel to exist. And when I say they, it's Hamas, it's, you know, Syria, Lebanon, those who haven't made peace with Israel yet. They don't want Israel to exist. And I would add UNRWA to that list. UNRWA's mission of return of 6 million Palestinian refugees is a mission to undo Israel, to reverse the war of 1948. And we can't coexist with. We can't coexist with those who want to undo our existence. So we can't coexist with Hamas, with, you know, Hezbollah, and with UNRWA's mission. It needs to be dissolved.
Okay, Daniel, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.